You're listening to a 95BFM podcast. Now it's time for our weekly chat with Labour MP Andrew Little.
Certainly is that time. I spoke to Andrew Little a little earlier this week, but we spoke about prisoner voting rights following the Supreme Court's endorsement of the High Court's decision that prisoners not having the right to vote went against the Bill of Rights Act. And we also spoke about Pike River Mine re-entry. Here is Andrew.
Yeah, look, I've welcomed that decision. We pretty much predicted that would come. All the other courts have said that the legislation, the 2010 legislation that took away the residual voting rights that prisoners on short-term sentences have, is inconsistent with the Bill of Rights. That has prompted us as a government to agree to pass legislation to not only, you know, confirm the right of the courts to make these sorts of declarations, but most importantly, to require then Parliament to do something about it as a result. So with the decision that came out last week on prisoner voting rights, it's a declaration by the court, it's a decision by the Supreme Court upholding a declaration. But there's no obligation on Parliament to do anything about it. Whereas I'm of the view, and the Attorney General is of the view, and now the government is, that when a declaration like that comes from the courts, Parliament should be required to revisit the piece of legislation and either repeal it or amend it so it is consistent, or to confirm it if Parliament genuinely believes that that is what is needed for whatever other reasons. So, look, the first order of priority for this government is to get the legislation passed that requires Parliament to respond. What we do specifically about prisoner voting rights will be further down the track, but at the moment, the government hasn't considered the declaration, at least the court's declaration, and therefore what we should do as a consequence.
And I suppose this requirement to respond impacts on Parliament's sovereignty in some way, giving the courts a bit more jurisdiction over that. Do you think that there will be a lot of criticism of this bill?
Yeah, that's the argument, and that's what we've come up against. There's certainly some MPs who say, you know, Parliament is sovereign, has the ultimate power, courts must do as Parliament tells it. But the reality is, Parliament, if it ever was, certainly is not now, the kind of bulwark against encroachment on human rights that it might have once been. And Parliament does pass laws that we know is inconsistent with the Bill of Rights, that does breach certain citizens or certain individuals' basic human rights. And in my view, that is not right, or at least it is not right that Parliament should be allowed to do that very easily. And I think a process whereby a citizen who considers that a law that has been passed by Parliament breaches their basic rights as set out in the Bill of Rights Act can go to the court and get that declaration, and then Parliament is required to respond in some sort of way. That, I think, makes Parliament more accountable to people when it comes to passing laws that, you know, have the potential to breach human rights. We must regard some basic human rights as, you know, virtually sacrosanct, if not sacrosanct. You know, the freedom of speech, freedom of movement, freedom of assembly, freedom to be free from arbitrary detention and arrest and so on. I mean, these are the basic hallmarks of civilised society, and we must hold on to those.
So do you not see the right to vote as one of these? Because I believe you said that it's not a priority for you to look at changing the laws around prisoner voting right now.
That's right, yeah. I think because it comes down to that question about when you offend and are found guilty and are sentenced to imprisonment, you start to lose some of your rights as a citizen. You don't stop being a citizen, and you don't lose your citizenship status, but you do start to lose some rights as a citizen, foremost amongst which is freedom of movement. You cannot go where you want to go. You lose some other freedoms. And there's always going to be a debate about how far the loss of those rights as a citizen should go as a form of punishment. And some will say, as they obviously did in 2010, that it is right that you lose your right to vote. I'm personally not convinced about that. I think at least prisoners on short-term sentences of less than 3 years, they're going to be back out in the community, and the basic kind of democratic principle is that you ought to have a say in those, when selecting those who are going to make the rules that affect your day-to-day life. And you might have been in prison for part of a three-year electoral triennium, but some part of it, if you're going to be free during that, then you ought to have that right to vote. So that's my personal view. It's not a government view. But there are those who say that if you're a prisoner, you lose a whole heap of citizenship rights. Some would say that you, in addition to the punishment of loss of freedom, you should be punished to have a whole bunch of other punishments as well. I'm certainly not of that view. But there's always going to be, a public debate about where the margins of that loss of citizenship rights goes as a form of punishment.
And will you be looking at this eventually, or are you worried that maybe you, Labour or your personal views and New Zealand First's views might depart quite significantly in this area?
Oh, no, look, I think we will get around to having a look at it. And I know, look, there's plenty of Cabinet colleagues who are saying, yep, the court's made that ruling. We have a moral obligation at least to have a look at it and reconsider it. I mean, one of the issues is we do have, just the next 2 years, we will have a very full legislative program. We've been very slow at getting legislation through the House this year. It sort of sped up towards the end of this year. So, we'll see what room we've got on the program over the next couple of years. But that's why I said it won't be top order priority. There are a number of other things I want to get through and sorted and into the House over the next over that period. But it won't be the end of the road in terms of the Supreme Court decision. I think there is a willingness to have a look at this at some point.
And moving on, Pike River. So which plan for re-entry have you opted for?
So we've gone for what is called the single entry plan. So at the moment, it's a single entry underground mine at the moment. The options were, if we didn't do that, to either build a second tunnel way further down the drift. That would be an extraordinarily complicated logistical exercise because it's conservation estate and what have you. We'd have to have build more roads and tracks, and then you'd have to have helicoptered out a whole heap of stuff that you dig out. That would have posed its own risks. The other option was doing a large diameter borehole away further down the drift, so coming in from the top. Again, although we are drilling some narrower boreholes for purposes of ventilation, a large diameter borehole of 600 millimetres is another significant undertaking again. And when they were all weighed up, actually what they came down to was a single entry option, going in through the current entranceway to the drift is actually the safest option, and that's what we've gone for.
And now that you know which plan will be happening, do you have a clear idea of when it might happen?
Yeah, well, there's been a fair amount of preparatory work done in the last few months. We'll now complete all that preparatory work. That'll take us another couple of months to do that. And the first major task, which is to go down to 30 metres down to where this big seal is, concrete seal that's about 5 metres thick, that has to be taken out. That'll be the first big task. That will commence in February next year. I think it'll be earlier rather than later, but we'll have a precise date in a few weeks' time.
And have you spoken to the families about this?
I've spoken to the family representatives. They were with me when I made the announcement. In fact, I told them the night before, and they're very pleased. They're very pleased that we're now making this step. But that actually, as they rightly point out, could have happened some years ago, because a lot of the information that we've used to put this plan together actually was information that we got from Solid Energy from the time when I became minister. It was already there. Work had already been done on investigating what options there were and what plans could happen. So they're saying it should have happened some years ago. I think they're probably right. It's happening now, and I think I'm very pleased at a personal level to see this happening.
And do we have a rough idea of costs? And so will the government be footing the bill, or will you be pursuing some companies for money?
The total cost now we expect will be $36 million. We've got extra money from Cabinet earlier this week approved. Look, it'd be nice to be able to go after either the Pike River Mine Company or other corporates, but the reality is it exists on paper only now because it still has a whole bunch of debts. It doesn't have any money, so there's no point in doing that. There's no one else really to chase, less to recover $36 million. But I think one of the important things is that if we get in there, we do the examination. The police are still regarding this as an open, you know, it's an open file, an open investigation for them. They haven't concluded it. If there is scope to bring anybody to account through the criminal processes, then you know, the police will make that judgment accordingly. But that's the only point of accountability that we've really got left.
That was Labor MP Andrew Little. The Wire. That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.